I do need to pay some bills.
We are live.
Yes, yeah? We are.
You still writing checks down there?
No, the fucking LabCorp and what's the other lab? I don't know. Anyway, my kids were on this, you know, acne med. You have to get these lab tests every month and blah, 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 blah. And it's a scam. The dermatologist has to see you every month. And so, you know, none of these places will charge you while you're there. They have to send you a bill. And it's just like, seriously? And not a digital bill, a paper bill. And it's like, seriously? What the fuck? So
it's probably for like Medicare, Medicaid, insurance reimbursement stuff is my guess. You know?
I guess. I don't know. It's fucking
what a nightmare. But the kids are good?
Yeah, man. But you look like you're hanging cool in the Grove or somewhere. Got the trees, the palm trees behind you and the, you know, somebody's condos or something. So.
Look yeah, like and there's a bunch
got
of
the shades on and the hat.
Bunch of noise inside. So I was like, I just gotta. It's been a pretty stressful day so far. So I figured I'd just go chill
Sorry
outside.
That,
no, just you know, scramble and stuff. You know, like I said, getting in health forms for sports and things. And doctor's supposed to have them yesterday. Didn't have them till today. You know, and then I'm like getting grinded on by everyone because I didn't show up at the doctor's office at 7 a.m. to get them. And I'm like, these guys close at 5. What are they up open at 7 for? You know, I was there at 9. And so it's like, you know, I'm just decompressing right now, you know, waiting for happy hour.
I understand completely.
I guess the sun's past the yardarm somewhere in the world, right?
There you go. That's the line that allows for an early happy hour. I like it.
Damn.
All right. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say I already blew through all my steps today. It's like lunchtime.
Oh,
damn.
That's awesome.
I have been scrambling.
That's good. Wait, we got two comments. I didn't even see. Damn, I need that Florida life like Joe. Philly sucks right now. Joe looks like he's waiting to meet Goldfinger for a game of cards near the pool.
Yeah, I got Niblets. I got my spy up there with the binoculars waiting. Remember who was the in that movie, the one who got painted, the gal who got painted in gold? What was her name? Tiffany something. But yeah, no, I feel that way. It's kind of warm today. I mean, it's been cold the last week or so, but you know, I mean by warm I mean 80 something. So
Yeah. It was warm the last couple of days out there in the yard, man. Definitely. What's going on? Let's see what the market's doing. 23.097. So we're still chopping back and forth. The fear and greed dropped a bit. Let me see.
Well, you know, I looked at that yesterday and saw it was at 61. And
yeah,
I was
dropped
like,
10 points today.
I'm like, when did that happen? I mean, I wasn't even paying attention. And then all of a sudden I see 61. I mean, I certainly wasn't like super positive.
I wasn't feeling greedy. No.
Yeah. So that's what I was kind of shocked. I mean,
well,
I what Sean said
just. Down to neutral. It dropped down to neutral. So it's at 51 now.
Yeah. I mean, when Sean said either or wrote or said, I can't remember, but when he started talking about triple resistance levels and a death cross, you know, I paid attention at that point. Because I'm like, usually we're looking at single resistance levels, and all of a sudden it's triple, and then the death cross. So I was like, better TP a little.
Shizzy said Phantom's over 50 cents. It's at 0.509. That's good news. He said he's very happy. And Eamon says, I feel like it's based on RSI.
Yeah, you know, that's one that we never talk about. And, you know, I have to admit, I used to look at that a lot whenever I was feeling kind of toppy. And I'd look at RSI just to see where that was. But
I just actually created OpenAI create an indicator for me based on some RSI strategies.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So currently sitting at, you know, it's still up there, but declining 56.36 on the weekly. Yeah, 69.66 on the daily. So still.
Well, where is it that you get the. where do you get that bar? One of the trading platforms, you know, you'll have it at the bottom of the chart and it just shows like the waves, and then you can see when it's cresting over the top.
That's what I have on screen right now.
Okay. I can't see it too well. Sorry. I'm just on my phone today, everyone.
It's all right, man. Eamon says, I know RSI has ballooned on most assets, so that could be why F&G is up bigly.
Yeah, I think it's all coming.
Go ahead.
FTM? Oh, no, I think that, you know, that's what's driving most of the market activity is, you know, again, there's a good discussion in the BTC channel on macro and TA and all of that. And, you know, I mean, the IIF guys are saying that the Fed's already pivoted. You know, we say 25 is baked in, but yet the market just keeps cranking. And I'm talking about traditional. And so, you know, I think everybody just really feels like the end is here. And I think whatever J-POW does next is going to determine, you know, whether it, which way it goes per, you know, Sean's TA. Is it up to 35, I think he said, and then back down to this resistance, or does it go down, leg down, and then come back up? And I think it's all on that. I can't see anything else out there other than some black swan event.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, I'm pessimistic at the moment. F&G, yeah. Eamon meant fear and greed.
Oh, got it. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel like
it's... Does TradingView have fear and greed index? Can you chart that on TradingView? I guess not.
Yeah, I don't know. You know Trading. You know TradingView much better than I do.
I don't think it... I don't see it. I do not see it. It is not available.
I mean, I just don't really see... I don't see a catalyst event here that just sends it ripping. You know,
no, but we also keep jaded. Thinking it's going to dump. Yeah, well, we're jaded. Everybody's jaded. That's why it's chopping, right? And, you know, look, when you look at the fundamentals that Sean talks about, the things he watches, the TA side, and the and then you look at the macro with everything that's supposed to be happening in the news, it, you know, it doesn't give you a lot of room for a massive pump coming.
Yeah, and I saw some, you know, while all the inflation data looks great, you know, for end of 23, I did see some stuff yesterday predicting like gas spikes in April. And, you know, I was in a store yesterday looking at stuff that, you know, I thought that was $3 a year ago. And now it's, this isn't me talking about, you know, back when I was little, it was 25 cents. You know, this is like a year or two ago, it was $3 and now it's six, you know, and, you know, even like water, it's like, you know, the shelves aren't full. So I blame that on the food companies, but, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's all supposed to be ready to tip over, but, you know, there could be that like little ramp up in the spring, you know, gas prices and things, which would just throw a wrench in everybody's plans. But I don't know. I mean, second half of this year, maybe we get there, but I don't know if cuts come. That's the thing. I just don't. I mean, unless they tip it over too hard. But, you know, not like they've never done that before. So, and of course, I'm always talking about from American perspective, you know, and a lot of people from Europe, it's a whole different perspective because they're looking at a, you know, economic contraction while having to raise rates to keep up with the U.S. as far as euro, U.S. dollar, you know, exchange rates or DXY stuff. So they've got a much tough, they have a much tougher road to hoe there than we do.
Yep. Shizzy says, Powell will try and smack our buns tomorrow, but will we let him? That's just not a good picture.
Sounds like a 1950s fraternity hazing party or something.
Niblet says, this feels like a market head fake, rope-a-dope. Between Sean's charts and empty macro indicators, I just cannot fathom why it's holding this high. Yeah, I've got the fire charts loaded up, and, you know, nobody's showing big interest at any level. The only thing that's had any little pump in volume coming in on orders is the $10,000 to $100,000 range, and it's still at middle of the road. I mean, there is not shit happening. There's a big sell wall forming at 24,000. You know, again, all of these could be fake outs, but nothing in the data is saying pump incoming. So
yeah, so be safe, everybody. Yeah, you know, I took everybody some profits over the weekend just in case it's the move down. Not, you know, not all of it. I didn't dump it, but I'm saying I just took some powder off the table, so I have it just in case. And so, you know, if everybody's up a couple of X's on stuff, you know, you might want to, you know, again, not financial advice, but, you know, there is a prudent way to play it rather than staying all in. If you haven't already made those moves, you know, I just think it's, you know, just what we've seen the last couple of weeks, it's always better to be safe than sorry, particularly when booking profits, you know?
Yep.
So just, you know, think about that, everyone, and incorporate it into whatever you're going to do. And of course, talk to 19 other people as well and form your own opinions. Don't just listen to what I'm still in action off of only what I say or what Brad says, you know, do it yourself.
Definitely, definitely don't listen to what Brad says. That would be, oh, Sean wants me to adjust the chart. Hold on. What do you want? There.
Yeah, you can't really, well, I can't see it, but.
Yeah, so he just wanted me to zoom it out, the view. I mean, if you look at the difference between now and, you know, middle of the month, not great. Like, everybody is out of the game.
Where are the support walls? Below the 22.5 or?
21.4.
Yeah, that's not, I mean, I'm no expert, but it looks like they're kind of moving down, right?
Let's look at the previous. Yeah, they're notching down, stair steps down, 22, 21, 21.6,
21.4. So, something to pay attention to.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right.
I'll tell you, I was surprised to see it back up this morning when I was scrambling around, and then I was like, all right, let's just take a look at this and see if there's one more thing to kick me in the face today. And I was like, oh, no, it's above 23. So I was like, all right. It was like the olden days. So we'd look at that one chart that had like all the tokens and the squares are the size of the market cap of each one.
Yeah.
And it'd be like green or red. And man, you fire that up in the morning, it's all green. I mean, you're high as can be. You look at that shit and it's all red. You just go back to sleep.
Exactly. Niplet says, is this money leaving the space to go elsewhere or sitting on the bench for next quarter? I think sitting on the bench.
That's my read.
I don't think there's a lot of leaving. I had a post. Let me see if I can find it. Investors pump money into crypto funds amid pickup in the market segment. Digital asset investment products saw $117 million in inflows last week, the largest amount in 6 months, according to data from CoinShares. Investors pumped money mainly into Bitcoin-related funds, which accounted for $116 million worth of the inflows. This comes as the world's largest cryptocurrency has been on an upward trajectory since the start of the year, gaining 40%. So somebody's putting some money in somewhere. $117 million is not that much money, but if it's the most in 6 months, we'll take it.
It sort of reminds me of January of 21 in some ways, because, I mean, we don't have all the other stuff going on. But, you know, remember how at the beginning of that there was a run and then a correction. And then at the end of the month, it took off again. And that was the big pump to like May. I mean, the dynamics look the same, but obviously the conditions around it don't. But, you know, when everybody thinks it's going bad, that's usually when it goes good.
Yeah. Exactly.
So who knows? We're just throwing darts at a board at this point.
Niblet says, if bench warming, wouldn't stables be that bench? Should we see inflows into USDT, USDC? Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And I haven't looked at those numbers to see if there has been or not. I mean, the other thing to remember is that BUSD would be the other one on Binance. But the other thing to remember is that there are a lot of people that can pull out into USD in their favorite exchange or custody solution. So there's always that as well.
Oh, yeah.
So
Coinbase. Yeah, that's right.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So we might not always see the data. Eamon says, reminds me of mid 2018. Yeah, I can. I get the same kind of general mood, hopeful but not too hopeful. Yeah, yeah, same.
Wasn't there a little run up in like July of 2018 that then retreated and then until we got to the Thanksgiving Day massacre? 2018, thanks. Well, that's like late November for the non-Americans out there.
Well, July of 2018, there was a little spike up from 6,076 to 8,223. Hmm. And then we had another, we had a dump shortly after that to 3,207. And then the nice pump in 2019 to 11,511.
Yeah, and that was like the summer of 2019, right?
Yep.
July? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I remember that was when I made the brilliant move to dump all the Cardano, Stellar, and Tron. Because they, of course, you know, all of those went to like $2 in the last cycle, and I was dumping them at like 15 cents. So, lesson to be learned there, fellas. Just hold the bags.
Well, there you go. There you go. All right. So, this afternoon at 3 o'clock, I'm interviewing the founder of Kwai Network, a blockchain I have never heard of before. It's a hybrid mining mechanism of traditional mining and proof of stake, from what I understand, has built-in cross-chain capability. We're going to learn more about it. I started reading the light paper. It's actually pretty in the model, but evidently it's there's been 1.6 million blocks mined. There's 1,700 nodes, had 110,000 transaction, and 1,070 miners on the network. I have never heard of this before, so I'm kind of going to be kind of fascinated to check it out. They have a light paper up. Started reading through that. We'll see what it's all about.
KWAI?
QUAI. Nope. It's Kwai.network. Kwai.network.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I mean... You know, I mean, how does Canto doesn't mine? Do they? Does Canto mine?
No. Proof of stake.
Got it. Okay. And these guys are mining. So kind of curious that we haven't even heard of them.
With all those nodes out.
Yeah.
Yep. Now, so, you know, this, I've been kind of into the chains lately. So I don't mean that how it sounds.
Mr. S&M. Or I guess that's B&D, right? Yeah, sorry. Not into your party in circles, bro.
On another note, another interview I'm going to try to get was this fucking epic thread by a new project called Hyperspace. And do you remember, Joe, the guy I interviewed that had, he had a built-in mining mechanism for minting NFTs that happened all in the browser? And at the time I interviewed him, I said to him, dude, you could turn this into its own chain. You could turn it into like something that functions in the browser and the average Joe could like mine in the browser, because the way the system worked was you had to keep your browser open in order to basically mine to get the NFT mint at some random time. And it was a really cool platform. The guy was fucking brilliant. I got to find that episode. I'll post it in the show notes, but these guys came out yesterday, Varun Mather came out announcing something called Hyperspace, which they title a new type of supercomputer. And essentially, it's a blockchain with mining in the browser that is also a P2P network. So essentially, it's a massive P2P supercomputer that is also a blockchain. I haven't read the detailed document yet, but did go through this whole thread. I'm going to post it in the show notes, but it sounds pretty cool. It's very, when I say hypey, it's not hypey like, you know, shilling something hypey, but it's very like change the world hypey in their language. But it sounds pretty powerful. So I'm going to read more on it. I want to look at the background of the people creating it. But this, you know, if something like this takes off, now you have the potential to do some really significant shit, right? Like if everybody is securing the network from their browser, And they say that they're going to start as a plugin for browsers and then launch their own browser. Now, if everyone is supporting and securing a network from their browser, it gets very interesting. Now, I'm sure there's all kinds of security issues and other considerations to think about for it. But and they even say, we're not selling a blockchain, but we're selling the supercomputer experience. So anyway, we'll see what they come up with. I'm going to read more on it, but I thought it was pretty fascinating.
So is it like distributed processing?
Is that distributed mining processing? Yeah, I mean, it's P2P, so your everything functions and happens on your computer, and then processing happens across the network, across all the interconnected computers and browsers that are connecting everybody together.
Wow.
Anyway, it's called Hyperspace. They're claiming, you know, it's going to be the second coming of Christ and Buddha. So, you know.
And everybody all in one. That's cool. Hey, do they have, just to, you know, jump to the head to the quick, do they have a token?
I don't know if they have a token yet, Joe. They have sold some NFTs, so this might, evidently.
This would be one to get in on them because, you know, if you're in early messing around, we all know what happens then.
Yeah, they're selling some NFTs. I don't even know if the whole network has launched yet. Let me see. I thought there was some dates in here. The roadmap. That's not a date. That's not a date. We're gearing up for an exciting next few weeks as we fully unveil our end-to-end design and demos leading up to our paper and early SDK. So not even, I don't think we're even close to prototype. Reserve your high handle today via our early naming service and get a free early adopter badge. So airdrops maybe come into that. It's at hy.gl. Maybe you can get yourself an airdrop later and use your Twitter handle to reserve your name. So.
Yeah, I think that, you know, look, to me it's interesting because, you know, we've got all these legacy chains out there. And when new ones pop up, I'm always intrigued because, you know, they're, you know, trying to make a better mousetrap, basically. And then, you know, but you have to think it's still going to be, I mean, what? You know, most of these ones we're seeing now, they started working on between 2017 and 2019.
Right.
So, you know, the new ones today. So you got to think this is something if you get in and mess around, you know, you might be thinking, what, 2025-ish, 2026 before it really blows up. So
before anything happens.
When all the, so when the other thing I was thinking is when you see all this new stuff, I mean, what does that say for, you know, the Cardanos, the Stellars, the Trons, all of those, you know, other than Dead Man Walking.
Yeah, well, who knows? We'll see.
Yeah.
I saw a bit of controversy floating around Twitter yesterday. I didn't know what the fuck it was about. Something about NFTs on Bitcoin. Well, evidently there's a protocol that launched called Ordinals Protocol that allows for NFTs on chain in Bitcoin. I have no clue how it functions. I just saw this article just before we came on. But essentially they are, it's a mainnet based application. The protocol referred to Ordinals was created by software engineer Katie Roadarmer, who officially launched the program on the Bitcoin mainnet following a January 21st blog post. The protocol essentially allows for the Bitcoin version of NFTs described as digital artifacts on the Bitcoin network. These digital artifacts could comprise of JPEG images, PDFs, or video or audio formats. The introduction of the protocol has the Bitcoin community divided, however, with some arguing that it offers more financial use cases for Bitcoin, while others say it's straying away from Satoshi Nakamoto's vision of Bitcoin as a peer-to-peer cash system. Bitcoin bull Dan Held is one of those on board with the development, noting that it would drive demand for block space and thus fees while bringing more use cases to Bitcoin. Some have pointed out these NFT-like structures have taken up block space on the network, which could drive up transaction fees. Wow. Yeah. So I guess that's a map of the block space, this graphic I have on screen right now. And I guess these big-ass blocks are ordinals. Anyway, privileged whites wanting to use JPEGs as status symbols may exclude marginalized people from participating in the Bitcoin network. So the argument there is if they fill up the big blocks and increase fees, people who can't afford the fees aren't going to use Bitcoin. And I think there's some validity to that point. That's interesting.
Well, but also, you know, with all the environmental thought about NFTs and about proof of work, it's almost like combining those two into one target set is going to put a big cross bullseye on a lot of people's backs.
Maybe
because,
so.
You know, I kind of like it, to be honest, myself, because of the use case side.
Adam Beck said the developers should take the stupidity elsewhere. You can't stop them. Well, of course, Bitcoin is designed to be sensor resistant. Doesn't stop us mildly commenting on the sheer waste and stupidity of an encoding. At least do something efficient. Otherwise, it's another proof of consumption of block space thingy. What does Jameson Lopp think? However, Ethereum bull Anthony Sassano took a shot at the blockchain studio for wanting undesirable transaction to be centered, which many believe goes against the ethos of blockchain. James Lopp said, when making sweeping statements about actions, beliefs of Bitcoin maximalists, you sound as ignorant as anyone who generalizes about other heterogeneous groups like nationalities, races, religions. Adam Back and Luke Dasher are both Bitcoin core developers who have encouraged censorship over the last 48 hours of these undesirable transactions. So no, isn't just Bitcoin max, and it's actual Bitcoin core developers. Oh, nice answer, Anthony. Anyway, so, you know, nothing like a little controversy, a little debate, a little stir up going on over in Bitcoin land to make things interesting. Be interesting to see what Sean thinks. Chuck says, this is elitist BTC bullshit. Let the market decide. If no one wants it, it will fail. If they like it, it will demonstrate what BTC's real destiny is. That's a really good point. And it's like, market will take it or market won't. Now, if, you know, folks start talking about censoring it, that certainly is going to fly in the face of kind of the ethos of the network.
Yeah.
The other side of that is, if the network becomes clogged, and it's causing people to not be able to get transactions through because the fees are too high. It also could be a problem. I bet some are saying this is a veiled attack on the network by Ethereum maxis. Sean is agnostic on NFTs on BTC. All right, We'll push that on Friday.
Yeah, did somebody get a screenshot of that? Does somebody get a screenshot of that?
It's saved always, forever, on video.
We'll have to put it on the blockchain.
There you go. Let's see what else. Oh, Aave Protocol version 3 is now live on Ethereum mainnet. It says its most exciting aspect of V3 is its flexible design, which enables a variety of new risk mitigation features and its improved capital efficiency and decentralized liquidity, all while reducing gas costs. Sean says it won't be censored, can't be without a BIP. It increases the security budget. That's true. Definitely does. Fees will increase the budget. But obviously, it would have to be passed in order to do that. But I would assume that if it got to be problematic for the network, somebody would suggest it. But who knows? With the deployment of V3 on Ethereum mainnet, Aave's first and largest market, our communities unlock new technical features and benefits. High efficiency mode allows users to increase their capital efficiency when supplying and borrowing correlated assets like stablecoins and liquid staking derivatives, LSDs. Isolation mode enables more assets to be listed on Aave as collateral while maintaining the security of the protocol. Liquidity risk can be siloed by listing assets in isolation mode. So opens up the marketplace to people providing more collateral types for lending. Gas optimization reduces gas costs associated with all the functions across the board by 20 to 25%. So good to see them continuing to build and innovate.
Yeah, I know they just kill it. I mean, they just keep, you know, pushing innovation, safety. You know, I got queried from some guys at MIT about DeFi and, you know, lending protocols. I mean, that's the question, lending protocols. And I'm like, where do you stop, man? It's like, isn't everything somewhat of a lending protocol? But I said, I think you're just talking about Aave, Maker, and Compound, something like that. Yeah. But then I went through a list of all the other ones. And, you know, I mean, these are smart guys, and you know, they're not seeing the big picture. And you know, something like this from Aave, you know, that's de-risking a lot of stuff for institutional plays, but also for people like us, you know, and our listeners, because that's always my go-to platform to borrow against.
Yeah,
because absolutely. I just don't worry about it, you know.
Joe, who's your favorite crypto securities attorney?
I think it's Lewis.
There you
go. New York crypto lawyer, Lewis Cohen.
Good answer. So evidently, Lewis and his team have been up to some shit. he put out a pretty epic thread. For 3 years, he's had a team going through every Howie decision and argument ever made in the United States. For those of you that don't know, Howie is the Supreme Court decision on securities regulation and laws. And essentially what they came up with was pretty concrete evidence that secondary sales of tokens are never securities and should not ever be deemed that by a court. That's interesting because the LBRY library case with the SEC was in arguments yesterday, and John Easton, an attorney he's the attorney for Ripple and some others, was given, I don't know what it is when the court says you can argue something, but he was given the ability to come argue something in the settlement.
Amicus.
Yes. Yeah. Well, he actually argued in the court and he got the SEC to commit to that. And his argument was based on a lot of Lewis's research that he and his team did in this pretty epic post and document that they posted. And the judge agreed that they are not securities. And the SEC, forced the SEC to agree when the judge forced him because he was pushing for it. Go ahead.
This is just secondary sales though, right? So
secondary sales. The initial issuance can still be deemed a security. But after the fact, the secondary sales, but think about what that impacts. I mean, that impacts every DEX that lists a token. Right.
You know, yeah.
That impacts everybody building on tokens that already exist and allow allocating swapping or other mechanisms.
Well, Deaton, a good example. That was it.
John Deaton, Shizzy said. Shizzy, correct me. It's John Deaton, not Eastman.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know who that is, but obviously he's an attorney. He knows his stuff.
Arguing for he's Ripple's attorney.
Oh, okay. So he's been fighting the fight for a couple of years. Yeah, that's really interesting because I had some. Because that at the beginning, you know, it was a reason everybody was trying not to be declared a security was, you know, because if you were, then none of the exchanges like Binance or anybody else would list you because they were afraid of exactly that, you know, illegally trading in securities. And so everybody would be fighting for that utility token designation or, you know, doing backflips, trying to figure out how to fit, you know, square pegs into round holes kind of thing. And, you know, now that frees all that up, because that means now you don't like say you've got some tokens in your wallet that aren't on exchanges. Now you can go ahead and sell those peer to peer to others and not be worried about, you know, selling securities. I mean, it's a lot like, you know, think about local Bitcoins, how they're always getting in trouble. Think about Charlie Shrem's situation. You know, I mean, that moots all of that stuff. You know, makes it not relevant. And that's a huge, and Lewis, you know, also Lewis's partner, I never remember her exact name. I want to say like Angela Markopoulos or something like that. It's a Greek name. She was the one who was general counsel for Second Life when they did they were, I think, the first token out there. And she was the one who went to all the states and got the money transmitter licenses. And so she's combined with Lewis, who I first met at Hogan Lovells, and he jumped out, you know, because they're, you know, high-end law firm, DC law firm, and, you know, they weren't really comfortable with, you know, any of the crypto stuff back then. And so he went and did his own thing. So this guy is deep, you know, he's smart. And, you know, he's the guy that I recommend, that firm, always talk to them whenever you're trying to pick somebody. And also there's another person who has their own firm, I always get her name wrong, but it's Josh, I think, Glazer, or Clayman Glazer or something. She's super smart too, and she's a friend of Lewis. Lewis is also friends with Caitlin Long. You know, he's friends with all of those people. So he's a great guy, and he is, you know, whenever I come to him with stuff, and he's like, he'll go, but if you then do that, then it's not really decentralized anymore. So he has very nuanced arguments about, you know, regulation and fitting within the crypto ethos. So definitely a guy to reach out to if you have any U.S. Chuck, regulatory stuff.
Chuck said, yay, Lewis, what a pro.
Yeah,
Niblet said, so if a project mints a pile of tokens, sells it into another DAO for $1, and that DAO puts those tokens on the market, is that now a secondary sale? I can't offer legal advice on that, but it would certainly sound like it, since it's secondarily. But if it was intent to, if the intent was to get tokens for your own issuance and to try to hide it and make it a secondary sale, I have a feeling that would be something from a court of law arguable that in fact it was just a sham. So but he said, if I hold a bearer bond and sell it to you, is it no longer a security?
Yeah, I don't know about that. That's, you know, bearer bonds are really tricky in this country. You know, but what it does say,
real quick, Shizzy corrected me. John Deaton is not Ripple's attorney. He's fighting on behalf of XRP holders who are suing the SEC. Okay, my apologies. Thank you for the correction, Shizzy. Appreciate that.
No, that's a good, that's a good clarification, because he's right in the space of the secondary sales then.
Yeah.
So what that means is that if you do a token sale, you know, i.e. it's going to probably be a security, but once, if you participate in that token sale and buy it, you know, then you can resell it and do whatever you want. You don't have to worry about that risk. You know, I mean, I'm sure if people want to get you, they're going to find a technicality, but it sounds like great progress to me.
Absolutely good progress. So here's what Lewis wrote. Oh, wait, what else we got? We have more comments, I think. Chuck says, I think the model is like trying to ditch illiquid hedge fund shares to your neighbor, not doing a full on offering, secondary or otherwise, of a bulk sale of tokens. Right. Yeah, I think that, I think that's a good logic to apply to it. In Lewis's tweet, he called, the document is called the ineluctable modality of securities law, why fungible crypto assets are not securities. He says it'll help bridge some of the gaps. All too often, it feels like regulators who perform an essential role in our society and innovators whose task is to ensure that we remain at the cutting edge of technological development in a rapidly changing world are talking past each other, not with each other, when it comes to securities laws and fungible crypto assets. We are well aware of the many skeptical voices out there who wish that Satoshi had never come along to show us how fluid and transparent value could be. We are not here to make a value judgment on the benefits of humankind of blockchain technology. We are here to say that, having been developed, these technologies are not going away. Law and society must learn to interact with the abilities these technologies permit. We hope our paper is the beginning of an important discussion on this topic. You can find our paper here. They are at dlxlaw.com, dlxlaw.com. I have not read through it yet. I have downloaded it. So I'm going to try to climb into more of their reasoning. Yeah, it looks pretty extensive at 76 pages of analysis of Huey decisions as it pertains to crypto. So really glad to see. Now, look, from their perspective, this is a great marketing tool for them, but it was obvious that they've dedicated 3 years to diving into this shit, that they really care about it. And that's kind of the difference you get in an attorney like Lewis, is somebody who's really going to do the hard work to make sure they understand what the hell they're doing for you. So anyway, Lewis Cohen, DLXlaw.com.
Yeah, one other thing about Lewis is he is the guy, or his team, they're the ones that secured that no action letter for Pocketful of Quarters a couple years ago. And it was the, I think it was the second no action letter. The first one was some kind of, you know, private jet company that was doing tokens, but they were really more like frequent flyer miles. And so he got one for the Pocketful of Quarters, which was a cross-platform token where, you know, they're building games and things like that, but you can move them from game to game. So it's another one to take a look at, but yeah, that had a no action letter on that. So he, you know, I mean, he knows the guys there and he has the ability to sit down with people one-on-one. I don't remember. Yeah. Maybe having a drink or a cup of coffee or something like that, and then make his case, and they trust him. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
He doesn't walk in with, you know, bad actors. And you know, if your idea is off, he'll help you make it right so you can still achieve your goals. But yeah, he is the guy. He's the man.
So here's a quote from what happened yesterday in court with Library and John Deaton. The judge turned to Deaton and told him, "Amicus, I'm going to make it clear that my order does not apply to secondary market sales." Imagine where we'd be today if the judge didn't allow Mr. John Deaton to present an argument. A man stands up. So that's fucking awesome. That's a good day for crypto. Now, at the same time, we have the Biden administration. Sigh. That's a big sigh.
Well, look, let's just throw Phil the whole sausage up. you know, I mean, there was somebody else talking today about, you know, the new House of Representatives is talking about wanting to do something with crypto. And I'm like, you know, I mean, they're all going to be about investigations in China right now, and then maybe crypto. I don't see anything coming out of that session of Congress and the debt ceiling.
Yeah, the House is going to spend all their time claiming COVID was a hoax and, you know.
Well, it's going to be just, they're going to be preoccupied for clickbait instead of legislate.
And Hunter Biden's laptop.
Yeah, well, you know, whatever, all that stuff, I'm like, it doesn't matter to me because I'm about how do we make crypto more accepted in society and more functional in society. And so they're trying to draw comparisons to what, how China's regulated crypto. And I'm like, really?
Give me a break.
That's your case? You know, that's your case? I mean, hello, Crypto London, if that's the case you're making, because all the protocols are going to go. You know, you can't ban it except for the elites, which is what China did. So,
well,
I don't
here's
know,
the
man.
Good news. I mean, look, I'm not pleased with the Biden administration, like kind of this heavy-handed tone to the statement saying that we should be regulating and that there should be no increase in ties between traditional finance and crypto. The good news is not a fucking thing is probably going to get done because we have a Congress divided. So we got 2 years of breathing room, most likely, before anything drastic happens. Everybody can kind of relax and not worry too much. We may have to ramp up something that an executive order does or something. But for now, I think we're in pretty good shape for at least 2 years. So,
well, particularly Niblet said, with those recent rulings you brought up, I mean, with what you just said about secondary sales, I mean, think about that. That clears a huge part of the problem out of the way. So,
yeah. Shizzy said, you guys should try and get Deaton on DeFi Lunch. He goes on shows live all the time. He'll probably agree to come on. It'd be a great show. Cool. I'll reach out to him, Shizzy. Yeah, that's a great idea. Thanks. Niblets, I don't see the legislative branch giving a shite about crypto. Gas stove, yes. Crypto, no. So why are they playing this? Who is pushing them in this direction?
I commented in my Twitter feed. Yeah, it's the extreme. Well, whatever. It's somebody.
It's extremist, like Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah. I mean, every time she opens her mouth, I know you have that cougar crush on her, buddy, but every time she opens her mouth.
It's embarrassing. It's fucking embarrassing. Like, how could I think about sleeping with that woman?
Probably like 18 beers, maybe. Sorry, that's probably not politically correct. But I mean, but her stuff is just nonsense half the time. And but again, you know, less clickbait, more legislate, you know, and I just think that that kind of dysfunction is just going to be there until, you know, the courts really settle what all of this is. And it seems like, you know, that is moving forward in lots of good ways. And, you know, because what does everybody say? I mean, Warren's like, oh, retail's getting screwed. But, you know, it's like, I don't see retail getting screwed out there. I see
how many retail millionaires there exist now?
Millions
of DeFi?
Probably.
Yeah.
So to me, that's nonsense. And then, you know, then of course, on the other side of the spectrum, you know, the more, let's say, pushing toward the libertarian side, you know, of course, me, you know, these all meet at the bottom of the spectrum. It's not linear. You know, total hands off. But then sometimes they have these, you know, wackadoo perspectives too on it, where, you know, about, you know, I don't want to say banning, but, you know, being anti parts of it. So there's no real pure argument anywhere. We're just a nasty sausage making factory.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have to figure out what it is ourselves and take the risk yourself, whatever risk you're willing to take. But I think we're in good shape getting it.
Listen, I want to encourage everybody listening to this show. If you, like Joe and I, are in the moderate political spectrum, if you can't stand the right and left extremes, the extremes, right? Well, I won't go there, but the extremes, if you're in the middle, if there is in your location, I'm sorry, this is US centric, but we're going to go there. That's what we are. If there is an opportunity for you to support, vote for, contribute to a ballot initiative or anything else in your state for ranked choice voting, get involved as much as you can. If anything can help break the logjam in this country of extreme right versus extreme left, fucking everything up, including crypto, Ranked choice voting does it. It makes it so that the extremes of each party can't control the main party, and it will probably encourage the extremes to start their own parties because no longer do they need to suck on the teat of the main party. So I would encourage you, go out and support ranked choice voting. It is the best way for us to break up the bullshit in this country and grip that extremists have. So anyway.
Yeah. No, why don't you, that's a good one. Two things. One, you know, look, we need to break apart from the two-party system. And the reason is it hasn't happened yet is because every time one party breaks away somewhat, they lose the election for sure. So nobody wants to go first. Think about the Greens in 2020. Think about Perot in, what was it, 92? You know, when Clinton won. I mean, that was Perot got 20% of the vote. And the Greens got like, you know, Nader got 5% in 2020, which basically gave it to Bush too. Now, why don't you do me a favor? I mean, I know what it is, but maybe a lot of our listeners don't. Just explain what ranked choice voting is quickly to everyone.
So ranked choice voting is this. It's not picking when you go in to vote. And there, let me tell you, there are different forms of this. So I'm just going to give you the core base of it. But when you go in to vote, instead of picking one candidate or another candidate, you pick multiple candidates and you rank them. So sometimes it can be the top three, your top five choices, whatever. What happens is instead of having runoff elections between just the two top parties, it now means that everybody that gets on the ballot has as much of a chance of winning. And oftentimes those further down in the kind of mainstream of the ballot can actually get elected because you rank your choices. And if the top two choices don't get the majority of the votes needed to hit the threshold in that election, then it goes down to the ranking. So everybody then gets votes for where they were the second choice, right? So now you're accumulating votes because you were the second choice of this person and this person and this person. You weren't their first choice, right? So it allows us to kind of say, okay, I like this party. If I'm a Democrat, right? I like this candidate first. But if he can't win, I want her to get my number two, and then I would like him to be my number three and him to be my number four and that one to be my number five. You don't have to vote for every candidate, by the way. What happens is as they go down the ballot of not getting to majorities, people accumulate the second, third, fourth votes, and then you can get a winner at each of those levels until they get to a majority. So it's a much better system. It breaks up the system and just makes things easier. So...
It's so less zero sum, and that's the way it should be. You know, particularly in all these state and local elections, and even presidential for that matter, because a lot of times there can be an independent running. And let's say you were a centrist Republican, and the Democrats had put up a lefter candidate. You could go, okay, my first vote is for my Republican guy. My second vote is for that guy who's running as an independent. And then that's it. So, you know, likewise on the other side, you know, you might, like, if you look at, you might pick one a centrist Democrat, but then, you know, if it's not that, then, you know, there's maybe a left of center, Republican or, you know, a not right Republican, but say a statesman type character who's been around for a while. And you might say, well, if I don't get that person, I want this person. And so, like Brad says, it weeds out that kind of winnowing down where you only have two choices. And it's left with, if you have two you don't like, you know, what do people do? A lot of people go to the poll and vote for the one they really don't like just to muck it all up. So, you know, it allows the voter to really pick the ones they like in order of preference. And, sure. You know, very well explained, Brad.
Thanks. Sean said, we operate proportional representation, ranked choice voting. Be careful what you wish for, dude. Sean, I understand that there are secondary impacts from this, but you didn't have a system like at the level that we have of impasse. And this is an opportunity to break a shit system that we have here where nothing gets done. Congress doesn't even read what they're passing because two party leaders at top of the Senate and the Congress control everything that gets put in front of them for a vote. Extremists control the primary process in this country. And so extremists on the left control the Democratic candidates. Thankfully that didn't happen in the presidential last time, but it is for me a way to extricate the country from the extremists who are controlling the two parties. That said, there may be secondary effects we have to clean up afterwards, but for now, I'll take it. So, you know, I understand also, where you're coming from, Sean.
Yeah, absolutely, Sean. And with the parliamentary democracies that, you know, in the UK and elsewhere in Europe, you know, they're already coalition building and there's, you know, like I remember.
It forces compromise.
Yeah, you got to put together something. Now, it takes out like, you know, strong, you know, a lot of people in the U.S. like that unitary executive theory, the strong, you know, CEO type as president. And it's, of course, the parliamentary democracy kind of neuters a lot of that. But, you know, the output, you know, I mean, to me, I think it's more here most efficient would be in the primary systems. You know, as you just pointed out, I wasn't even thinking of that, Brad. But when you said that earlier, we do know the only people who show up to vote in the primary systems are the, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid types. It's not like the centrists typically don't show up because they're like, yeah, whatever comes out, we'll deal with. So I think it really could help there. But yeah, you know, I mean, we know the super inefficient parliamentary democracies, but the one thing is that, you know, inefficiency, you know, and like in this type of democracy, which is, you know, the three branches, checks and balances, you see, if inefficiency is what we really like, because it keeps some authoritarian leader from taking over. And just like parliamentary democracy does that as well, it makes that harder to do. And to me, I'll take that inefficiency to avoid, you know, more, you know, Mussolini's and everybody else. I'm not picking on the Italians, but, you know, I'm just picking on authoritarians.
Well, look, for me, it will allow extremists to break out into their own parties and stop mucking up the message of, you know, my party and the other party. And moderates all should want this, because it then gives the extremists some negotiation power, even though they're not a majority in Congress. And it also allows the messaging for moderates to control the messaging for their party if they're a moderate party. So I think there's a lot of opportunities. I don't want to spend too much time on it. Niblet said, and then the Tea Party took over the GOP from the inside. Ranked choice is the best way to undo a lot of extremism. I'm a huge supporter of ranked choice. Me too. Sean says, Nibbles, we have 850 years of blowing the shit out of each other. Don't assume it reduces extremes. Of course, there will still be extremes. They just won't have as much power in this country. And that's what my goal is with supporting ranked choice voting. So we're past time, Joe. I got another 1 o'clock today, so I'm going to wrap it up. I have a ton more shit to cover, but we didn't get to it. So that's all right. We had plenty to talk about.
We'll get it tomorrow. We'll get it tomorrow, man.
Hey, buddy, I hope your afternoon gets good and happy hour comes sooner than later. You know, you have a little less stress sitting out there chilling. So hope you have a lovely afternoon.
Feeling better, and, man. Thanks.
Good. Sean, Niblets, Shizzy, Chuck, Eamon. That is the gang today. Thank you so much for participating. We love and appreciate all of you. Please, if you get a chance, if you like what we're doing, go to Apple Podcasts, go to Spotify. You've heard me say this like 400 times, and yet you still have never done it. So I'm talking to you.
Me?
No, all talking right. to the folks who've just sat there, heard me say this 100 times. It annoys the fuck out of them every time. Just go do it. Just go to Apple Podcasts.
Yeah. Boom.
Brad, you just say, if you don't even like me, if I piss you off, just say, you know what? This is a great show because Joe's there. If you just do that, it's great. I don't care. Just go write fucking something in the reviews, please. Thank you today. Just 5 minutes. That's all I ask.
We don't charge you. Too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. If you're watching on YouTube, please smash the thumbs up. Click the little bell after you subscribe to make sure you get alerted about new episodes. And if you have ideas for the show, you want people to come on the show, let us know about it. We'll be there. We'll be happy to talk to them. Niblet says Goldfinger cheats. I don't know what he means.
Oh, maybe this.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right, folks. Thank you very much, Joe. I really do hope you have a great afternoon, and we'll
Thanks,
chat
buddy.
With everybody later. All right, man.
All right, everybody else. Take care. Everybody else have a great day too. Thanks, man.
All right, you bye-bye. Too. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.